Ernie Lehman. Ernie's name is probably known to many of you here. He's been practicing here in Minnesota for a long time. Ernie's going to talk to us today. And the title of his talk is Full Circle, and I'll let him explain that.
Thanks very much for coming and listening to this talk. I'm going to take a rather different tack than Jim. I'm not only don't have any phase diagrams, I have very little geology in this talk. The purpose of this talk is really to inform you all about all the exploration, or most of the exploration and mining going on in Minnesota, because you're all involved in projects elsewhere in the state. In some ways, we've come full circle and have gone from gold to iron ore to copper, nickel, and a number of other commodities, and to some extent have come back to gold exploration, which is currently going on in the northern part of the state. The gold exploration started back in the middle of the 19th century. Iron ore was discovered and started mining iron ore in the 1860s, moving on to the Mesabi Range in the 1890s. And finally, copper-nickel exploration started with the discovery of the copper-nickel in the area of Birch Lake, started in 1949 when the discovery occurred, and copper-nickel is currently being explored. This is Franconia's drill barge in 2008. Some of the drill core from under Birch Lake. Why do we need resources? This is a famous diagram which I commend to you. You know, each person in the United States will use 3.3 million pounds of minerals, metals, and fuels in their lifetime. The biggest of those uses is actually stone and sand and gravel, almost more than a third of that. Let's start with non-metallic resources, and we'll touch briefly on these. I won't mention a couple of things, notably peat mining and dimension stone, but diamonds are a possibility, and I see Harvey Torlefson in the audience. This is Harvey's, some of the work that Harvey's group have done, especially with a group called Western Mining, an Australian group looking for diamond indicator minerals in Minnesota, a statewide survey that was done in about 2004 or 5. There is a potential. There are probably kimberlite pipes that can be explored. My firm actually has one of those, and you're welcome to come see me and if you got a big check to go explore it. Sand and gravel, you're going to hear more about later today. Sand and gravel is a big business in the state of Minnesota, particularly here in the Twin Cities, where we are a consumer of almost half of the sand and gravel and crushed stone that's being produced in the state. So this is a quarter of a $1 billion industry just on the sand and gravel side. Another $100 million industry on the crushed stone side. Silica sand, we're producing silica sand mainly from the Minnesota River Valley. Some of that sand is being used for hydrofracking, which has come back in importance in the last few years with the shale gas developments, major natural gas developments, which require fracking the formations to extract the gas. Kaolin clays, mainly used as as additives in the making of cement. We're not producing ceramic quality clays, though there are some potentials for that. Again, it's mainly in the Minnesota River Valley as related to granitic intrusions there and the weathering of those intrusions. Iron ore, and iron ore is a big business. Iron ore business has its ups and downs. It's on the up with the developments in the third world, which are consuming increasing quantities of iron ore to make steel, particularly China and India. Prices of iron ore on the spot market are in excess of $100 a ton currently. We have basically six operations that are traditional taconite operations, starting from the Northeast North Shore Mining, which is operated by Cleveland Cliffs, Minorca, which is operated by a group, Indian group that is the largest steel producer in the world, Mintac, which is U.S. Steel, Hibtac, again, a Cleveland Cliffs operation with a number of owners, and Keetac, which is, again, a U.S. Steel operation. There are three interesting projects going on. The Mesabi Nugget is a new venture which is just about in the commissioning stage. It's going to produce upgraded taconite pellets that are upgraded to from 64-65% iron, which is in the taconite pellets, to a 97-98% iron product, which can be used in electric arc furnaces as a substitute for pig iron or scrap. That is the first plant of its type in on the range. There are other plants in the world that do that. It's using a patented Japanese process. The operator is a company called Steel Dynamics, which has electric arc furnaces, in, particularly in the Chicago, Indiana, Michigan area. The second project is SR Steel. SR Steel is developing or has permitted an operation to go direct from mining ore producing taconite pellets, which are a concentrate, to producing a direct reduced iron product and then producing steel as one continuous process. And the reason for doing that is the energy saving by keeping the material hot from the time you start to pelletize to the end of the steelmaking process. That project was permitted a year and a half ago, just before the markets collapsed in end of 2008. It is now actually, desires to expand its capacity, and so they have just applied for a supplemental EIS for a larger plant than they were originally permitted for. Again, this is an Indian, private or public Indian company. The other project, which is unique and new, is a project called Magnetation on the west end of the range. What Magnetation is doing is taking low-grade tailings and waste rock deposits, mainly tailings at this point, and by a magnetic process, high-intensity magnetic separation, making a concentrate from those tailings, that is, recycling the tailings and making a concentrate that they can sell as fines to the iron ore, to the steelmaking industry. Here's just a graph of the annual tonnage, shown in black, of taconite production versus price. You can see the average value per ton adjusted to a inflationary. So this takes out the effect of inflation. But you see, at the end of chart here, the value going up. Well, in 2000, the end of 2008, 2009, the price temporarily plummeted, and you can see what happened to production. We're now back up in this area again with current prices. U.S. prices are a little different than world prices. World prices are considerably higher. Why are we mining iron ore? World steel production is increasing. We have substantial reserves. In addition to open pit reserves, we have potentially underground development of many of these deposits. Almost 50 years ago, Gene Flyder at the university here in the mining department was contemplating the economics of underground mining, the down-dip sections of the Bawabic Iron Formation. We have a strategic location with respect to the U.S. steel industry, which is mainly in the Midwest, in the Chicago, Cleveland, Pittsburgh area, and these new technologies such as the Nugget Project and magnetation. These are the producers. There's about 43 million tons of capacity on the range for taconite pellets. That actually equates to about 120 million tons of actual iron ore, which is concentrated on about a 3-to-1 ratio, and it also equates to about another 120 million tons of waste rock that must be moved. So you're moving annually about 250 million tons of material to produce that 43 million tons of product. The new processes I just talked about. Now let's look at non-ferrous and precious metals. The first category I'd like to mention are volcanogenic massive sulfide deposits. These are typically often copper-zinc deposits. Good examples of those, the Flambeau mine in Wisconsin, at Ladysmith, Wisconsin, which was mined for copper by Rio Tinto, and the Crandon deposit, which is sitting over in Wisconsin, is one of the world's, certainly a world-class volcanogenic massive sulfide deposits, with tremendous resource of copper and zinc, some silver and some gold, which has not been mined. But these are places like the Canadian Kid Creek deposit is of this type. There is a world-class group of deposits. Polaris Joint Venture, which I managed back in the 1980s, we did quite extensive exploration in north central Minnesota. Unfortunately, we didn't make an economic discovery, but there are still potentials, and I would expect, with prices being what they are, exploration may well happen again. Gold, and if you can see that, that's it. Gold is what we started out. What the early explorers, mineral explorers in Minnesota, were looking for, and actually did discover minor deposits, a number of places. Gold is the first exploration for gold was in the area around Lake Vermilion, Eagle's Nest, and so forth. Early on in the talk, you saw a picture of Rainy Lake, little deposit on an island in the lake, Dryweed Island, which now is part of the Voyageur Park. But there was some gold mine there. The park acquired that land, about 30 years ago. The exploration for gold, as I said earlier, led to the discovery of the Vermilion Iron Range and started the iron mining in Minnesota. in the 1860s. Interest in gold exploration revived in the 1980s. There was quite a bit of exploration in some of the areas east of Lake Vermilion south in what's called the Virginia Horn area by Newmont, Kennecott, Rudin, Freiberger, which was a small iron mining company on the range. And the results were generally disappointing. Since that time, the geologic data available is much better, and our understanding of gold deposits is much better, which has led to a new round of exploration. These are some of the areas east of Lake Vermilion that have been explored. There are several companies exploring for gold. Vermilion Gold is a privately held company which I manage. We have been drilling actually west of Lake Vermilion on several areas, and we plan to do some additional exploration. That drilling went on during this winter, and hopefully will continue this summer and into next winter on a number of targets St. Louis, St. Louis, Itasca, and Coochaching counties. Prime Meridian, I think, is located more to the east of Lake Vermilion, and Agate Resources, which I know nothing about, is also east of Lake Vermilion. Why do we explore for gold? Well, this is why. The price, and this again is a nominal price, not a deflated price, not adjusted for inflation. Prices peaked in the early 70s at the time of the oil embargo, hit about $800 an ounce, went back down, and over a period of years settled down in the $300 to $400 an ounce range, and then more recently have gone up to and currently are at about $1,150 an ounce, which even when you count in inflation in that is a substantial better mark. The geology here is the gold deposits are located in the Archean and Proterozoic metasediments and metavolcanic rocks north and west of the range. And now we go to the Mid-Continent Rift, which Jim Miller, this is what a rift really looks like. This is the East African Rift, which is a comparable structure that is very much in evidence in East Africa. Another version of what Jim Miller talked about, I won't dwell on that. I want to point out, though, two known copper-nickel deposits which are on subsidiary intrusives actually outside of the rift. One at Eagle in Michigan, which is a Rio Tinto project, a Rio Tinto Kennecott, and Lakeview, which is also Rio Tinto, which is in Aiken County, Minnesota. A very much a very similar deposit to the Eagle deposit, smaller, higher grade than the deposits in the Duluth complex, much higher grade, much higher sulfur contents as well. Before we get into the copper nickel, though, let's talk a little bit about titanium. Titanium deposits in Minnesota are generally south of the copper-nickel deposits in the Duluth complex. A series of titanium-rich sub-intrusives, which are mainly mixtures of ilmenite and titanomagnetite, fairly large. There are about 13 of them known. They're quite low grade as far as the titanium goes. Titanium is all the white, you know, we no longer use lead in white paint as the pigment. We now rely typically for white pigments, we rely on titanium oxide. So this is the major market for titanium, is making the oxide, which goes into paints, goes into paper, goes anywhere where you need a white pigment. Titanium metal itself is much more difficult to produce, but it has a large number of quite strategic uses. It has very good corrosion resistance, a good weight to strength ratio, so that makes it usable in aircraft. So where you have corrosion resistance issues or you want a good weight to strength ratio, titanium is metal of choice, but it is fairly expensive. There is currently exploration going on by a company called Cardero Resources, which is exploring on the Long Nose deposit. Which is right down here, is really not very far south of Polymet's deposit. That deposit's been known a long time. It's been explored before, but Cardero has just acquired it and is engaged in exploration drilling project to confirm the resource that's there. There are going to be some process issues because it involves extensive processing to extract the titanium from that deposit as titanium oxide. The other sources are largely beach sands from places like Madagascar, and early on there was an attempt to do that in Florida. I don't think those Florida sands are being mined anymore. Copper nickel, which is for many of us our first love at this point in time anyway, fickle. We're all very fickle. I'm not going to dwell on the geology because Jim's covered most of that. This is the Duluth Complex colored version of the map you saw that Jim produced. The complex here itself, and as Jim said, about 12 intrusions compose that complex. This is another version of the slide Jim showed. This shows the footprint, really, of the mineralized zones at these various deposits. You see the deposits here on the South Kawishwe and Partridge River intrusions. Now, compare in footprint size well to Norilsk, which is the big Russian deposits. It's bigger than Stillwater in Montana. It's bigger than the Skagerrak. It's much bigger than Voisey's Bay, all of which are these, except for Skagerrak, these are all active. Sudbury, of course, producing most of Sudbury and Norilsk producing most of the world's nickel. This is the outcrop right close to the Discovery outcrop on the Spruce Road in 1949, when the Forest Service put a road cut through there, and a fellow named Fred Childers, who was on that road gang, picked up a rock that contained some shiny minerals, and he took it into a fellow in Duluth named Roger Whiteside, who was a iron miner and prospector, and Whiteside identified it as chalcopyrite and put together a little group to pick up Forest Service prospecting plans. Forest Service prospecting permits on the area, and then first approached Kennecott, which was then my employer. And later, when Kennecott didn't want to pay any money, he went to International Nickel. and they sold it to International Nickel. So this is the outcrop of the Spruce Road deposit. Here are the deposits in relation to the regional geology, South Kuishwi intrusive. They're all along the margin, the lower margin and outcrop of the South Kuishwi, and then here's the Partridge River intrusion down here. See, these are the players in the Duluth complex. Teck Corporation, which owns the Mesabi deposit, which was actually discovered by Kennecott in about 1958. PolyMet, with a partner, financial partner called Glencore, a private Swiss company, mining and trading company, who have the North Met deposit, which was actually discovered by U.S. Steel. Duluth Metals, with a partner called Antofagasta, a big South American copper company, who have the Nokomis deposit, Franconia Minerals, and I should preface that anything I say about Franconia, don't believe a word of it, because I'm an insider. So you're duly warned, and you can't sue me afterward. Franconia discovered Lehman Associates discovered the Birch Lake deposit in 1985. It was not known before that. It was a later discovery. And we have purchased the Maturi deposit and the Spruce Road deposit from International Nickel some years ago. Lesser players are Prime Meridian Resources, which has the Waterhen deposit, which also has titanium with it. And finally, Encampment, which is a privately owned company that has acquired the Serpentine deposit. This shows the deposits going from north to south. Spruce Road, Nokomis, which is really the down-dip extension of Maturi. Birch Lake here, a little bigger than on Jim's slide, thankfully. Serpentine, the Mesabi deposit, Teck Resources deposit, the North Met deposit, and finally Wet Lakes down here. The brown on here is Franconia's mineral holdings in terms of leases and permits. So we have about 15,000 acres of mineral leases, and you can see there are large gaps between deposits, which they're there because there hasn't been the exploration done yet. So those are all open, and we expect that there will be additional discoveries in addition to the about 4.4 billion tons of indicated resources that have been identified so far. Copper-nickel outside of the Duluth complex, the first deposit that's been drilled is the Lakeview deposit of Rio Tinto, which I talked about before. It's a very interesting deposit with considerably higher grades. The grades are probably about 3% copper and 3% nickel, as opposed to the 0.6 or so percent copper in the Duluth complex proper and 0.2% nickel in the Duluth deposit itself. There are many other opportunities to explore outside on these outlying intrusives, and I'm sure Jim can provide you with that information. We have a huge resource, as Jim said. Historically, there have been metallurgical problems with trying to develop this resource, which we think have been solved. And we also have seen, and particularly in the last 10 years, a rising world demand for nickel and copper and platinum group metals, and as a result, generally very strong prices. Over 4 billion tons indicated, world-class deposits. Bulk mining can be applied even underground, and actually PolyMet and the Teck deposit will be open pits, so Teck has an underground component to it. Birch Lake, Maturi, Spruce Road, and Nokomis will all be underground operations. In the case of Spruce Road, there is an open pit resource, but it's a sensitive area, and Franconia does not have any plans to develop that deposit at the present time, and when we do develop it, it will probably be also underground, confined to underground mining. Here's a short discussion of the problem, the metallurgical problem. That graph you saw, Jim produced that graph. Here's the relationship of world production of copper in relation to price. You can see that, you know, we've had for 30, 40 years a constantly rising world production of copper, and in the long run, production equals consumption because people don't produce copper and just put it away. So there's a strong, and you've seen the recent price increase, though the price dipped in early 2009. It's back up to about the levels of 2008. Here's our situation as a country with respect to imports. We are roughly 47% reliant on imports for our copper supply. We are almost 100% reliant on imports for our nickel. We don't produce any nickel. And we're about 80 to 90% reliant on imports for platinum and palladium, and essentially currently 100% reliant on imports for cobalt. These are all strategic and critical metals. Platinum and palladium are the main use right now for platinum and palladium is in the catalytic converter in your car. And that's a response to attempts to clean up air emissions. And in gasoline engines, you can use a mixture of platinum, palladium, and rhodium, and you can sort of handle the price a little better by substituting palladium for platinum. But in diesel engines, platinum is the preferred and almost essential ingredient for catalytic converters in diesel engines. Platinum right now is at $1,750 an ounce, 50% higher than the gold price. What's the benefit of a new non-ferrous mining industry? What's its importance? First of all, I postulate that it's good conservation ethics to mine these deposits where they are, and particularly where environmental regulation and environmental responsibility are good. And so it's also a question of environmental ethics, and it's a good national strategy because it lessens the dependence on imports, lessens the balance of payments issues. And that's it. Thank you. Result of the fact that Polymet is at the surface, essentially, allows them to mine much lower grade rock than we could mine at Birch Lake. So in a sense, my first point, conservation ethics, says mine the maximum, because that's good ethics, I think. On the other hand, as a cost factor, the top of Franconia's Birch Lake deposit is from 1,400 to 2,500 feet below the surface. And we don't want to and can't possibly open that as a strip mine. Also, there's a little problem. There's a lake over part of it, which would create some water problems. So it's generally it's an economic break. Underground is going to require higher grades, and we are about, at Birch Lake, about twice the copper and nickel grade as Polymet, and about four times the platinum grade. two times the palladium grade. So that's what enables us to actually look at the economics of that.
Thanks again, Ernie. We're now at the time of our break.